We have to give full credit to Charles Fox, who's the former governor of our branch, and he very much with Deborah and with Gustavo worked out this beautiful collaboration, which started last year. I introduced On the Waterfront, and a number of Academy scores were done with the LA Phil as movie nights. David, the great David Newman, is also one of our members conducting. And then this is a new thing for all of us that fundamentally, as you know, we have the LA Phil, which is, I guess we can say, the greatest orchestra in the country, one of the greatest orchestras in the country, collaborating with the Academy. It's a natural collaboration. It's a beautiful collaboration. And we're presenting brilliant scores from the past, many of them well-known, many of them not, and then presenting our this year's nominees in the second half of the concert. So I think it's going to be a fantastic concert that really shows a lot of the range of music that's been written for the movies.
Mm-hmm. As I look through various orchestras' seasons, mm-hmm. as they announce their new seasons, this is kind of the time of year for that. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing so many concerts that are pretty much pick your favorite movie and the orchestra is playing the score live. And that has turned into a huge, huge successful thing for orchestras. Is the next step kind of a collaboration like this where, it's not just one film and the score is played live, but it's putting together thematic programs like this, including film music on a regular basis on a main stage concert?
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. We'd love to do this every year with the Phil. I think that we have a really nice organizing principle. You know, what is the sound of home? What is the sound of fear? And I think these are all not only just dramatic concepts for film music, but also for listening to concert music, for listening to programmatic music. You know, what does it mean when you listen to a piece of concert music that references certain things programmatically? And how is that drama played out without a movie? And so I think it's a way in for a lot of people. I think it was certainly a way in for me as a young composer, and I think will be a way in for other audience members of all ages. So I think it's a really, really good idea. It also lets you in I think a really interesting way into the compositional process. Mm. And I think not only from film composers, but any kind of composers that are writing dramatic music, including opera composers and many concert music composers. So it's a neat way into the putting together of music. And we love that we're doing it with the Phil, and we hope we do it every year.
Can you talk more about that concept of having this music sort of let us in on the compositional process? So as a non-composer, I have no idea how someone can just take nothing and turn it into something that so beautifully matches the emotion or enhances or amplifies, you know, what's going on, the drama on screen. I can't conceive of how some person who is a member of my species can do that. And yet it gets done so brilliantly. How can you show that through music?
Well, first of all, I have to say I'm honored to be a member of your species.
Right?
It's a good feeling. look, it's what we're trained to do, but it's a lot of collaboration. The concert opens up with our senior governor, Michael Giacchino, demonstrating exactly how we do it. And guess what? There are bumps in the road, because so much of writing film music, since it is collaborative and since music is something that you spend years learning how to do, and directors come from a visual and dramatic perspective, so much of what we do is forge that communication, among our collaborators. And what does somebody mean when they say, oh, the low violins? Well, they may mean the cellos. They may mean something completely different. So I think how you take that dramatic moment, you determine where it starts, whose perspective it's coming from, which is hugely important. Is it coming from his or her perspective? Is it about the place? Those are all decisions that are made as a part of the collaborative process, and then we start working. And sometimes we hit it right out of the park the first time, and sometimes it takes multiple tries to get what the director is envisioning or the producers for the project. And that's what we do as media composers.
Mm-hmm. And I love the range that you're going to show with these different categories. So if I haven't been clear yet, the concert is organized in terms of different, as you say, the sound of something. So right. there's home and there's the chase.
Right.
There is fear, there is love, there is courage. And then the future is we're going to hear music from each of this year's nominees.
It's the present, really.
The present, yeah. You know, just the different ways that a composer can treat this kind of emotional moment or dramatic moment on screen, I think is going to be really fascinating to see.
So understanding drama, knowing what's going on, being able to read film, that's a huge part of what we do.
Yeah.
We made a really interesting choice by choosing Mika Levy's score for Jackie for The Sound of Fear. And I think one of the reasons why we did is she wrote another fantastic score, Under the Skin, that did not receive a nomination. But in that movie, it's about living with fear. It's about a post-traumatic stress syndrome, I think, to a certain extent. So that's a very subtle look at it. It's not a boom, boom, jumping out of the bushes kind of fear. It's what happens when something so terrible happens to you, and how do you internalize that? And I think the whole movie was about her personal relationship with this event that was so huge and historic and impactful. And so it becomes this very in-your-face personal score, both loud and soft kind of simultaneously. So I think that's a masterful approach to fear. And she did such a great job with wonderful direction from that filmmaker. So it's just a big, big idea.
Yeah. A composer in the classical world, Missy Mazzoli.
Mm-hmm. Who I just met last week.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. I was talking to her a few months ago, and she runs a composer institute for young female composers. Mm-hmm. And she basically says, you know, none of my composing teachers growing up were women. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, that's something that I wished I could have had. Mm-hmm. Were any of your mentors in the world of composition women?
Well, let me just start by saying after our interview, I'm going to USC to teach my students.
Yes.
So that's a really nice thing. And that's just why I do it. Yes and no. When I was little, I had a piano teacher, Helene Mirisch, who's still alive and teaching here in Los Angeles, who was amazing. But I went to study with Nadia Boulanger, and she was very, very old at that time. So I can't sit here and tell you, oh, my God, her lessons changed my life. But what I can do is tell you that Louise Talma was there. And Louise Talma was an American composer. Not that many people know about her, but she was in that whole circle. Also there was Mademoiselle, whose last name I have no idea, but her name was Mademoiselle. And she was also there forever. And they were teaching ear training and counterpoint. And that French training, that's not friendly, like, oh, gee, I'm taking you into my embrace training. That's like vicious. Okay, you go there, they rip you apart. But I loved it. Mm. And Louise Talma was amazing. Also, I was very fortunate in that I grew up here, but I went back east to boarding school. And when I come back in the summers, I took a class at UCLA. At that time, Elaine Barkin was teaching at UCLA. There she was. And I, you know, at that point, when you're young like that, you don't think, oh, wow, a female composition teacher, because you don't know about those barriers, I think. But I remember her looking at me and saying, oh, you still have little girl knees? You know, which was like this amazing thing to say. And now I so understand what she meant and how extraordinary maybe that was for her. But yes, I think that when you see it, you can be it, which is why programming women, having women instructors, having women review application processes in universities, all of these things is absolutely crucial. It's no longer a luxury. It's no longer a, gee, should we? It's a mandate now. And so I think that we're all committed to doing this. I met Missy at a launch party for Mozart in the Jungle because Missy and Caroline Shaw and Paola Prestini and I had all composed music for Mozart in the Jungle for this current season that's airing, where they are talking a lot about female empowerment. And I have to tell you, had no trouble finding good women composers to write music for them. It was not a struggle. They got great people. And I think that there's a lesson to be learned there.
Yeah. And, well, talking about that show, the upcoming season, it's not only living female composers, but female composers from the past as well. And I'm looking at the soundtrack for season 4 of Mozart in the Jungle, and it's way more inclusive than most major American orchestras' seasons. And I'm like, Wow, so a television show is showing the way.
It is, and what's so funny is that I wrote Thomas's music. So it wasn't even like, oh, well, she's going to do the chick music.
Right.
It's like, you know, they hired me to like take the Lisp Prometheus and Beethoven Egmont and write this muscular music, and I use that word very much on purpose, for Thomas, yeah, for his brain. And so that is the kind of the least sexist approach, which is, it just is because I was right for the job. It's not that hard. We can help you, orchestras, you know, radio people, institutions. We have a lot of women out there who are motivated, who are working, that can help you find what you need.
Mm-hmm. Looking at this concert and looking at the LA Phil's programming, it's certainly the most inclusive orchestra probably in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Although I can't say that because I haven't looked at every orchestra in the world, but really in the United States, absolutely.
Right.
And looking at this concert, I remember when they announced this concert, and you know, I just sort of looked at it and I'm like, wow, that's typical LA Phil. Being inclusive, being intentional about it, but yet it's also sort of like effortless. Like, of course, like we're going to do this. And of course, you know, there's going to be 9 women and composers of color balanced against 11 white men. Like, of course it's going to end up that way. Like, and of course you had a hand in putting this program together.
I did.
Not just a hand, I should say.
I did have a hand. I wish that we had more women in the concert, but our history is our history and our future is our future.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you that I started by going through all the Oscar nominees over the 90 years, and it was amazing. I was surprised to see what was there. And not only just in terms of diversity, but just in terms of this intersection of classical music and film music. And because that's where my heart is too. You know, I'm a doctor from Juilliard. I mean, that's what my background is. And so I'd loved seeing that. But yes, there is diversity. And I think that that's the whole point. I think you don't have to look that hard. I think that at this point, if you're programming all male and all white, you're overlooking. It's not that you're not looking hard enough. It's that you're not looking at what's there. And we want to reflect what's in our community. And we want to in 5 to 10 years, have half or more than half women on that concert. And I don't think we're going to have a struggle doing that. But we still have a lot of work to do to get there. For us, I think it's about getting on those bigger projects for women film composers. It's about getting on the marquee projects. And this is across the board in Hollywood. I'm not saying anything that nobody here has ever heard. It's about breaking that very, very hard glass ceiling. I think we can see through it now. It used to be kind of a cement ceiling.
Mm.
Now maybe it's glass. And there's some sunlight even coming through. So we have to work harder and push through that in the next few years. And at the Academy, I have a fabulous other women governors there as well. We have a really great board. We're really pushing through that, and we're going to make it.
You've talked about in our conversation, I think before we went on, you talked about a hidden diversity. Can you explain what you mean by that?
For example, I think that people look to what they know and think that's all there is. So I can name you scores this year that were composed by women composers that you might not have noticed, like Tamari Cawley's beautiful score for Mudbound, or Mandy Hoffman wrote a great score for The Lovers. And, you know, it goes on and on. There are great scores being written for documentaries. There are great scores being written for independent film. The problem is what gets noticed are the big blockbuster films, or even the films that, you know, that get the most sort of Academy motion. So, and that's not to say that we don't have incredibly fine scores that we've nominated this year. We absolutely do, but there are others. So I think that what we're looking for, as I just said, is that we have to break women through to those top films, and we have to start working on those top projects. And then you'll see that we're out there and we're doing the work. We're perfectly capable, and we have been doing it, but not as noticeably, let's say, as my esteemed male colleagues.
Mm-hmm. How important are the awards in that sort of elevation process? So, you know, a composer gets nominated, maybe doesn't win, but it at least is, you know, an Oscar nominee. Does that help towards getting a big blockbuster project, or is it completely a different thing?
I think it helps. I think let's just start with getting into the Academy, okay? When I was admitted, it was 2015. I was the third woman composer in our branch. Okay. Since then, we've admitted an additional 11 women, and we're going to have more this year. So we're already gone from an anomaly to a community. Okay. So that's the first step. You bring women into the academy. You acknowledge that these are careers that are viable and important and esteemed and accomplished. Okay. That's where you start. Then you start getting into the groove. You meet people. You create connections. You see, it's about how good you are and how accomplished you are and all the things that we've talked about earlier. But it's also, come on, it's about who you know and how do you get into those echelons. The academy is not the only way, but it is kind of one way. And so I personally, and I speak now as a human rather than as a governor, but I think that this is a really important thing. I can tell you it's been important for me. And it's one of the most satisfying experiences of my entire life is meeting people in other genres, right? Meaning great casting directors and costumers and hair and makeup people who are in a different part of production that I'm involved with that I would never encounter, cinematographers, you know. So being on the board and being involved with the Academy has been a blessing for me, not just career-wise. You know, I don't know that it's had that big of an impact yet career-wise, but I think just personally to be involved in cinema in a different kind of way, it fills me. And so we want that experience for other people. But I think it's that. I think it's facilitating communication. It's facilitating connections. And that's our next step, and we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. How helpful is it when a campaign is launched that is critical of the process? For example, the Oscars So White activism push. For example, if I were to say, there have been 116 different individuals who have won an Oscar for a film score, and 113 of them have been men. How helpful is that versus, from your standpoint, from being on the inside, looking to the future and saying, look, the future is so bright? Does criticism and working from the inside in a positive way, do those things work together, or is it harmful?
I think they do work together. I mean, and again, I speak as an individual rather than a governor, but here's what really helps numbers. So what you just said is helpful. The work that Stacey Smith does at USC and also Martha Loudson, these numbers that say that we're 3% of the top 250 box office films, those numbers don't whine. Numbers exist. Numbers give us a motivation to do better. I think it's good. People need to speak up, and it's important. You've got the motivation. Now we have fantastic enlightened men. We've got a lot of women. We've got more people of color, although God knows we all need to work on that in this business. And we are establishing what the Academy is going to look like for the 21st century. I mean, I love to call it the new Academy, but it builds on the old Academy. And so it's all fits in a piece. I think that protest is good. And I say that as a human rather than as a governor. But as a governor, I can say that numbers are numbers. And we're working on them and we're working towards improvement. And mm-hmm. It's motivating.
I don't want to put you in an awkward spot, but
no, listen, I'm proud of being a governor, mm-hmm. and I'm also a feminist, and I'm proud of that too. Mm-hmm. So, and I think those two are right now working really beautifully together.
Yeah. I would be remiss if I did not ask if you had without giving away your vote, if you had a favorite score this year, maybe one that wasn't nominated. You mentioned the Mudbound score to Mark Colley, which I thought was absolutely spectacular.
Great film score.
Kind of like, bummed it didn't get nominated.
Bummed, but you know, but it's okay.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, she was launched. Like I said, I love Mandy Hoffman's score. Here's one, Teddy Shapiro's score for Captain Underpants. Great score. you know, clever, really smart, you know. So there's all kinds of stuff out there that you see during the course of the year. I mean, I've just spent the last weekend looking at all the documentaries and the short films, too. The short documentaries are spectacular this year. There are hidden gems in there as well, you know. I discovered Agnes Varda's composer, a woman, Johanna Berkowitz, I think is her last name, although I may very well be mispronouncing that, a woman in her 70s, a Polish composer, who is fabulous, who wrote one of my favorite scores. It's not a new score, but it was a score that I did in sort of researching her a little bit for the Governor's Award. So it's just there's great stuff out there, and we just have to work at discovering it. It's so – John Williams is a – he's great. I mean, how often does he inspire me, you know? Desplat, you know, but there, it's like for Desplat, for me, it's the score for Birth. That opening for Birth is brilliant. Or John Williams, my favorite music of his is Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
It may not be – you know, the Star Wars. That's what I'm saying. Is the
well, and this year, John Williams scoring an animated film for the very first time.
That's right, a short film.
At 80 what?
Yeah, no, he's amazing. So yeah. I think that you're looking at it at diversity of career too. You know, what are people doing? You think of Quincy Jones. You think of like great big band. You know, in Cold Blood, who knew that he wrote that score, which he did such a gorgeous job of. What a master musician. So. It's really looking at the totality and taking a moment out of that day and looking beyond what's obvious. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I want people to take away from this concert. And when we look at the future, we want to look beyond what's obvious.